Hey, thank you, Kane. 807 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Glad to have you here. We'll check in with Quinn Hillier in just a second. Hey, are your credit card bills keeping you up at night? Interest rates in the double digits? Go check that credit card statement and then check out LightStream. Be smart and pay off your credit card balances with a credit card consolidation loan from LightStream. Get a fixed rate as low as it's dropping, y'all. How about 5.95% APR with AutoPay? You can save thousands in interest. And you can get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000, and there are no fees. You can even get your money as soon as the day you apply. Plus, LightStream, a division of SunTrust Bank, is one of the nation's largest financial institutions, so you can have complete peace of mind. If you want to save even more, how about this? Y'all can get an additional interest rate discount on top of the great rate. The only way to get that discount, though, is to go to lightstream.com/Sullivan, my last name. Their website, LIGHTSTREAM.com/Sullivan. Subject to credit approval, rate includes a 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/Sullivan for more information. Start saving today. All right, phone number, text line 343-0106. And a lot coming up on the show this hour. And we'll start off with the leadoff batter from QuinnHillier.com, also the author of the Mad Jones trilogy, Quinn Hillier. Hey, man.
Good morning. How y'all doing?
Doing good.
Good.
You know, I was thinking about this, so kind of want to get an opinion here and also get a lesson on what is in question, because one of our top stories on the website this morning, three big things. Democrats set to hold Barr in contempt over Mueller report. What handles do they think they have? What's your take on that? Walk us through this.
Okay. First of all, I'm setting aside, I don't particularly like Bill Barr's personality, and I think his legal theories are wrong in a number of areas. That's immaterial. He's also not corrupt. He's an honest man, and they are trying to hold him in contempt of Congress for two things, both of which are totally bogus. Number one, and the main thing that they're citing, is that he refuses to turn over to Congress in general the completely unredacted Mueller report. Now, I'll say the second thing and then go back and explain why they're both bogus. The second thing is, of course, he didn't show up to the House Judiciary Committee hearing last week, but he wasn't even under subpoena then, so that was a request, not a legal demand, and he had absolutely no legal obligation to show up. So if that's part of the contempt proceedings, then that's even more bogus. But let's go back to the Mueller report. What they want him to do is to break the law. Those redactions are there for a reason, for four reasons. Either they're material that's classified, or they're grand jury material for ongoing investigations, or I forgot the third reason, and the fourth reason is their grand jury material that would give out information about innocent bystanders. Mueller himself reportedly approved the redactions. The redactions are a very small part of the report. You can see by reading around the redactions that there's almost no chance that there's anything in the redactions that is relevant to anything that would convict anybody in a way that Congress would be interested in. So saying that he should unredact those things for all of Congress is absurd, because what happens is if you go to all of Congress, it easily leaks out, and you have material out there, again, about, say, either classified info or info about innocent bystanders who it might be embarrassing but has no legal ramifications and should not be in the public eye.
They're basically asking him, they're going to hold him in contempt of court if he doesn't break the law.
Yes, exactly. and they're saying, well, we have subpoenaed the unredacted version, therefore you have to give it to us. Well, no. even a, I mean, that's as if, say, a district court approves a subpoena and you appeal the subpoena to the appeals court saying, we can't hand this over because it's legally redacted, it's classified or whatever, and the appeals court will say, well, of course you're right, you can't hand this over to the defense side as part of discovery or something like that. Congress is in the realm of an adversarial party trying to say you have to break the law because we have subpoena power, and that's obscene. And whatever else I or anybody else thinks about Bill Barr, he's absolutely right to say no. Now, he has offered to turn the unredacted portion over to select to the congressional leadership and the top people on intelligence behind closed doors so they can come see it, but they just can't take it out, so that they will know what's in there without it being a chance to get into the public eye, which is forbidden. So that is an absolutely legitimate offer of his, and they're saying, no, you have to share it with all 435 members of the House of Representatives, which of course means you're sharing it with the public, because as soon as one of those 135 people get it, they will leak it to the public.
Sure, sure. That's a very leaky boat. Let me go back to something. So contempt of Congress, does that have teeth? What if you're found in contempt of Congress, can Congress do something? Do they have law enforcement power there? Or what?
Okay. If you are found in contempt of Congress and Congress declares you guilty of being in contempt, you can be fined and serve up to a year in jail. The key thing is that will never happen to Bill Barr, because even contempt of Congress requires the Justice Department to actually file paperwork with the court acknowledging it. And as we found out when Congress quite rightly held Eric Holder in contempt — Eric Holder was the Attorney General for Obama.
Right.
They held him in contempt in something where he was so out of line that even several dozen Democrats joined the contempt vote. Okay. I mean, I'm not going to get into that other than that he was clearly in contempt of Congress. But he said, well, I'm head of the Justice Department, I'm not going to enforce it against myself, and I'm going to order all my underlings not to enforce it. Well, the same thing could happen with Barr. He could say, well, I'm not enforcing it. If he doesn't enforce a contempt of Congress finding, which is a conviction, he is technically breaking the law himself at the time, unless he finds some way to appeal it. And as far as I know, it's not technically appealable, despite the example that I gave by analogy earlier. But anyway, short answer to your question, fines and up to a year in jail, but it will never be enforced unless, get this, Democrats take over the presidency, and then they can retroactively go back and say, you were found in contempt, I'm going to stick you in jail. That's the danger to Bill Barr.
Quinn, can you kind of explain — I mean, it was a clown show in Washington, D.C. last week with Barr showing up in front of that congressional panel. It seemed like he was questioned or told to for 18 hours or so. Some of them weren't really even questions. But the next day, was Nadler wanting lawyers to question him rather than just the congressional panel? Why didn't he show back up on Thursday? And then explain the chicken and the empty chair and all the optics from that.
Okay. Nadler, the Democrat, liberal Democratic chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, had requested Barr to come as a cabinet member to testify on all this stuff, and Barr had said yes. He doesn't have to for a request, but he should, and he said yes. And then Nadler said, by the way, though, we're not asking you as — you know, we're not going to question you as members. We're going to have a staff attorney question you. And basically, that's what they used in the Watergate hearings. And he wanted the visuals of Watergate. And Barr quite rightly said, look, I am the head of a department of a co-equal branch of government. and this is not a legal proceeding. A staff attorney should not be questioning me. I am going as a co-equal branch of government to answer questions from my co-equals, meaning from Congress, but you're not going to make it look like a star chamber and like I am being accused of something when I'm not. And he said, other than in the case of an impeachment or a direct legal inquiry, no cabinet member has ever been questioned by a staff attorney as the main form of questioning, and I'm not going to set that precedent. He was absolutely right to say that. It's a matter of the proper separation of powers, et cetera, et cetera. But they wanted the visuals of, oh my goodness, this is something as big as Watergate, because that's what they did in Watergate for all the, you know, all the second level people testifying. They had staff attorneys go through it because it was a legal proceeding. It was an impeachment proceeding. This is not.
And it's all about the optics, right? I mean, this is going to be used. This is a part of Democrat platforms for 2020. So, I mean, they would like this to go on forever, hence trying to get Mueller to testify.
Yeah, they would like this to go on forever.
Right.
And, you know, and of course they pulled the stunt, not just with the empty chair, which by now is so cliche that it's really boring, but then they had a chicken on there because they're saying Barr is chicken. I mean, frankly, I think most people look at that and say the Democrats are the ones that really look juvenile there. Again, you don't have to agree with Bill Barr to say that there's something wrong with how the Democrats are going about this. It's not the right way to do things. It's juvenile, it's petty, and it's trashy.
There we go. Quinn, remind folks, if they have yet to pick up the trilogy, want to get some summertime reading, how do they do it?
Please go to Amazon.com and go and type in my name and then Mad Jones. And they're three books of a trilogy. They're fun reads. It's satire. It should make you laugh. It should make you think. Order it on Amazon and then give me a good review on the Amazon site, please.
All right. And the news and commentary, where do they go for that?
QuinnHilliard.com aggregates it all, but that only gets updated about once a week. If you want to go to Quinn Hillier Washington Examiner, you'll get almost everything that I write these days. Quinn Hillier Washington Examiner, and it's all there.
Good stuff, Quinn. Thank you. We'll talk next week.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
All right, Quinn Hillier checking in. Let's do this. Caller number 6 right now at 343-0106. Got tickets to Widespread Panic, Pensacola Bay Center. Tickets go on sale for the show on Friday. Your chance to win them before you can buy them. That's happening right now for caller number 6. Good luck. Good stuff. 824 FM Talk 106.5 at Mobile Mornings on this Tuesday. And Abby, you're packed with tickets to all kind of events. And congratulations to our latest winner.
Yeah, Lloyd of Loxley won the tickets to see Widespread Panic.
Very good. And here's how it works. So it's taking the high-tech thinking caps here at FM Talk 106.5. Which would be Bill, our general sales manager, to explain to me. So it's a two-night concert, two-night stand, with Widespread Panic coming up on Saturday, August 31st, and Sunday, September 1st, Labor Day weekend.
A break in between? Or are they just going from Friday night all the way through Saturday night?
Well, the first show is Saturday night.
Okay.
And the second show is Sunday night.
Gotcha.
But the beauty is, of course, Monday's Labor Day. A lot of people have that day off. Lloyd just won tickets for the Saturday night show. Coming up during Midday Mobile today, you'll have another shot at winning tickets to Widespread Panic, but you'll be vying for the Sunday night show.
Okay.
Then tomorrow morning, it'll be the Saturday night show. And then tomorrow midday will be the Sunday night show. Or maybe in the middle of the week, maybe Thursday, I'll just flip it around.
Do a switcheroo?
Just because I can't let anything be, and so maybe I'll switch it around. But, so we've got those tickets go on sale on Friday through Ticketmaster.com and the box office at Pensacola Bay Center. We also have more chances of tickets coming up today for Bryan Adams, that show Friday night, plus 99 bottles of beer on the lawn at Southern Napa in Daphne. That's our buddy Jim Cox and the crew over there. Great event. And then do not forget, Mother's Day on Sunday. Mm-hmm. All right, so I've just got everything lined out for you. Hey, coming up, we're going to, just after the news break, State Senator Chris Elliott's going to join us, and we're going to talk about a couple things. Number one, I mentioned yesterday that these ALDOT meetings on the Mobile Bay Bridge, there's one tonight in Spanish Fort. I say tonight, starts like at 4:30 in the afternoon and goes till I think 8 this evening. And then Thursday night, there's going to be one of these same deals, but it's going to be on the west side. What's up, west side? Where I am. Mobile side. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be from 4:30 to 8. And these are our chances to come out and speak and hear about the Mobile Bay project, Mobile River Bridge project, mm-hmm. and have public commentary and all that. So part of this, and I saw this from Senator Chris Elliott this morning. He had put, here it is. He says, ALDOT's current plan will cost the typical Baldwin County commuter $185 a month or $2,220 a year. I'm fighting for a larger frequent user discount for coastal Alabama drivers. We must build this bridge, but the proposed tolling scheme puts entirely too high of a burden on locals. And he's talking about, come voice your opinion. That's tonight, that meeting in Spanish Fort. But like I said, Thursday, there's going to be one in Mobile as well. But it's, this is a subject that came up when they rolled out the tolling. And we talked to the people from ALDOT. We're on the show on Midday Mobile. We talked to them in depth about this. And they said necessarily that the tolling would be not just for the bridge. And I think most people know this now, but I'll repeat it because sometimes you just didn't catch it in the news stream before, or you were out of town or whatever, under a rock, wherever you were, that the tolls that are proposed between $3 and $6, okay, that's
pretty wide range.
Pretty, like I said, even for me, I said, that's like 100% difference. It's almost doubling it. So you have $3 to $6, but the part of it that I think a lot of people didn't realize is that would apply to the Wallace Tunnel as well.
Yeah.
And remember in that interview with the ALDOT folks, they said, you have to have tolls on both or it'll be leaky. They don't mean like water coming in the tunnel. They mean the normal habits of people trying to keep money in their pocket. Mm-hmm. If they did not toll the tunnel, people would go the tunnel and not the bridge to avoid the toll.
And so, then they wouldn't get the financing that they're looking
that's
for.
That's right, because this private entity, this group that's going to build this out, is looking to get paid back, which, by the way, they have it's, I think, 55 years.
Yeah,
and they
how
can raise
that?
The tolls based on, I think, inflation. We'll talk about that with Chris Elliott coming up. But so you've got between $3 and $6 for the toll, and then you have the bridge, which I think most people assumed if there's going to be a toll, it'll be on the bridge. I don't think that was a shock to anybody. But the other part of it that we've discussed at length, but like I said, maybe there's still some people that haven't heard about it, that it would also be a toll on the tunnel. Now, this is not going to be toll booths. The way I understand it, it's going to be toll by plate and all mm-hmm. that kind of stuff, which, by the way, Florida, I ran down to Florida months ago, uh-huh. and I'm paying off stuff from FDOT, and they're still sending me stuff where it's ridiculous.
Are you getting pictures of you flying by in the car?
Yes, but I paid one, and it's like for $2.80, and I pay it, and then they send me another. It's FDOT.
A y'all racket.
So the tunnel and the bridge would both be tolled between $3 and $6. Mm-hmm. So this is what then has the conversation going, that how much it'll cost. And y'all were telling me what it would mean to your family well before I heard anything from government officials. Those that come and go across the bay every day said, hey, they ran the math. This is what it means for their business. This is what it means for them personally. But they're this estimate here, and we'll talk to Chris Elliott about it in just a second, said ALDOT's current plan will cost the typical Baldwin County commuter $185 a month or $2,220 a year. He wants a discount for local drivers.
Yeah, and lots of people on both sides of the bay bounce back and forth all day, all week long. What I'm wondering, and maybe we can ask Chris Elliott about it coming up, but as we negotiate and as the representatives negotiate this toll number down and try to work with them on that, is it still possible for us to kind of screw up this deal to where we end up without a bridge?
I don't have an answer for that.
Strength of negotiation there? Like they can say, okay, well, we'll take your bridge away if you don't want to pay the toll.
Good question. I don't know. We'll ask that. By the way, I'm looking here, there's a ferry. Well, that's a passenger ferry. I have to go to Istanbul, Turkey to buy it for $1.3 million. looking here. I'm looking for ferry boats, because if that starts happening, I may reduce the number of shows I do here and start running Sullivan's North Bay Ferry.
Great business plan.
What do you think? All right, news is next, and then we'll be right back.
836 on FM Talk 106.5. This is Mobile Mornings. Let's head to McConnell Automotive, where we talk to Mitch McConnell. Hey, Mitch.
Hey, Dalton. Good morning, buddy.
So the brand-new 2019 Sierra AT4, I understand you guys have the best deal on the hottest truck in America right now.
Yeah, man. I tell you, first of all, if people hadn't seen that truck and they're driving, you know, maybe a Ford or a Dodge, I would say definitely check it out before you get another truck, because it probably, according to a lot of people that even, you know, Dalton, people that weren't even looking at GMC before are coming and buying these things now. And so the exciting thing is the truck. The other exciting thing is, you know, we hadn't had any super big discounts on these, just the 18 models. But if you go to our website, and it's McConnellAutomotive.com, one of the trucks, as an example, is the demo that my brother drove, and it's a beautiful truck. And we're giving people $12,000 off a 19 model AT4. And I mean, the biggest discounts before that, Dalton, might have been $4,000 or $5,000. So this kind of blew our minds. We're excited about it. I think we got five of them left. I'm driving a white one, and it's the one with the six function tailgate, red tow hooks on the front. It's got the lift kit on it, and big bad boy wheels. I think you get a little bit cooler and maybe a little stronger, and your testosterone increases just driving this sucker. I promise. It is that cool of a truck.
You seriously can't beat it, and it's only at McConnell Automotive. We appreciate it, Mitch. Have a good one.
Yeah, buddy. Y'all have an awesome Tuesday, Dalton.
That's Mitch McConnell. Go see him and the crew at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65.
Right, 8:37, and let's do this, because I'll go to State Senator Chris Elliott in just a second, but I want to grab Keith in Baldwin County, because maybe this is a question we can get answered. Hey, Keith.
Hey, how are you?
Good, man. You got a question on the toll?
Yes, sir. Quick question.
Go ahead.
Live and work over on the Eastern Shore. I go to Mobile sometimes just to pick up brick samples from two of your wonderful companies over Mobile.
Right.
What about, I do this twice a week at $6, since I'm in a commercial truck, both ways. $12 a pop adds up real quick when I'm in Mobile for 30 minutes.
Yep. I mean, that's what, and we'll appreciate that, because I mean, well, that'll segue nicely into this conversation. Joined by State Senator Chris Elliott on his way to Goat Hill right now to talk more about the tolls are too high, man. The tolls are too high.
No question about it. They absolutely are. You know, Sean, you and I have been talking about this project for, you know, better part of 5 years. The devil's in the details, and we have we figured out exactly what the devil's going to cost now, and it's entirely too much.
Okay, and you lay out on your Facebook page, you lay out some of these numbers, and this is like you heard Keith talking about, man, since we first started talking about this, listeners to FM Talk 106.5 have been calling in, texting in with what is going to, you know, just like Keith did the math of, okay, I come and go this many times a week, or this and that, and they've talked to me about the real numbers for their life. You're saying it averages how much a month, how much a year?
You know, if you start looking at the average commuter that's either living in Mobile and working in Baldwin County, or more likely living in Baldwin County and working in Mobile, you're talking about, 40 round trips a month, or excuse me, 40 trips a month, 20 round trips a month, and that's $200 a month. And that's just a back and forth. That's $2,400 a year to the average Baldwin County commuter, and that is absurd. And that's not something that's palatable. Look, the bridge is an expensive project. It's one of the largest public infrastructure projects that's even contemplated in the Southeast right now. It is the largest public infrastructure project that's ever made it this far in the ALDOT planning stages. And nothing's free, and we get that. The problem is, the funding scheme for this puts a disproportionate amount of this cost on local commuters. And that's simply not fair, and it's not something that's going to work for me or for ALDOT.
Okay, but I've talked to the folks with ALDOT and, you know, the private entity here coming in funding this project, and just like when I had asked the question, wait a second, you're also going to toll the tunnel? They said, yeah, we have to toll the tunnel because it'll be leaky. If not, people won't take the bridge, they'll take the tunnel, and we necessarily have to have this funding to pay for it. So and I agree, as one of the people that would get gigged on occasion by this, how do you build the bridge and the Bayway expansion without getting the tolls from local people? Is there a way to do this and still make the bridge happen?
There is, and then I want to get to Dalton's question about how tenuous we are right now in this situation, but there is a way to do it, and it's called an increased public subsidy. We are going to have to put more money up front. This is no different than buying a house or a car. We're going to have to put more money down in order to not have our monthly payments be as high.
I understand that.
To not have the tolls be as high. It's really just about that simple. The question is, where do we come up with that money? And then, again, the question is parity with other projects in the state and in the Southeast. You know, we look at what's going on in Birmingham now, where they're spending just under $1 billion on a mile and a half of elevated roadway in Birmingham. We're talking about an Aldot infusion of somewhere around $450 million in coastal Alabama. How come they got $1 billion up there and we got $450 here? There's some inherent unfairness going on there. And we're going to have to make sure we bring that to light, shed a light on that, and ask those questions. And then there's one other important thing, and I don't want to get too far in the weeds, but part of this funding scheme is maintenance costs. So back to your house analogy, this has essentially got a home warranty and all the maintenance costs for this bridge built in for the next 55 years.
Now that part's good, but also the toll is in effect for 55 years, right?
That's exactly right. But that's one of the reasons this project cost is so high, is because it is putting all of the maintenance costs and all the maintenance responsibility on the concessionaire and on the bridge owner, which sounds like a good thing, except for that it drives up the cost significantly on the front end, because they got to bake that in their profit margin, and that's exactly what they are doing. We do not see that happening on the projects in Birmingham or Huntsville or other parts of the state. Those are things that will be helping, you know, us in coastal Alabama will be helping pay for the next 55 years in Birmingham and Huntsville, whereas they are not being asked to do that on our project down here in South Alabama, which is unacceptable.
Yeah, that is. I didn't even think about that part in comparing the two, because, I mean, if the concessionaire, the private enterprise, has to, there's no relief like there is in government. They have to build this in and know that they can pay for it going forward, versus the state, where the state could allocate more funds down the road to do this. And that disparity between, I'd like to point out these disparities, and that's a huge one between Birmingham and coastal Alabama.
Well, it is, and it's the fight we've been having for a long time. And look, we need this bridge. There's no question about it. Our economy needs the bridge. We have grown to the point where we have traffic backups on this particular bayway and bridge, you know, over 200 days a year that last over an hour. I mean, everybody in coastal Alabama knows what we're dealing with here. But the question is, at what point is the cost for commuters just too darn much? And at what point do we just put our feet down and say, you know what, it's bad, but it ain't that bad? And I think we're probably looking at that right now.
Okay, so the key is to have, is the match still like an 80-20 between federal and state local?
Absolutely not. And this is the part that really infuriates me. And I'll have a letter. I think I emailed it to you this morning. That I will be submitting as part of the public comment. But the federal portion that we hope, and I emphasize hope, to get out of U.S. Department of Transportation amounts to 7% of the total cost of this bridge, Sean. 7%. Not 80%.
What happened to the 80? What happened to the 80?
The 80 is gone. The total amount of infra-grant money at the federal level right now is about $800 million for the entire country. And we're vying for a piece of that. The Aldot infra-grant ask has gone from $250 million last year, which we were not awarded, down to $150 million this year, which is probably still a stretch out of a pot of $800 million for the country. The problem is, we as a country are in the same spot we as in a state are in. We don't have the money to keep up with our infrastructure.
But it's, I mean, this bridge project and the expansion of the Bayway is a billion-dollar, with a B, billion-dollar proposition.
Yeah, $2.1 billion is the total anticipated cost of this project now.
So it started at $800 million. Yeah. I want to point out, it started at $800 million, and we're now at $2.1 billion. Okay.
Yeah, and in all fairness, and I want to say this, I'm being tough on my friends at Aldot right now. We've got some of the brightest minds at Aldot working on this right now, and I have a ton of respect for them, and and them trying to figure out a way forward. But at some point, we've got to push back and say, okay, guys, this isn't the way. I appreciate y'all looking under every rock. But the bridge itself is probably still in that $800 to $900 million range. We've just added all the bayway work to it as well, elevating, tearing down the existing bayway, elevating the bayway, widening the bayway to 8 lanes instead of just 4. So the scope of the project has changed dramatically.
But aren't those connected? Because the way I understand it, they shouldn't do one without the other. Are they? Can you sever those, or are they connected?
So the folks at Aldot, and again, I've been involved in this project for at least the last 5 years or so, have dealt with that, right? So you've got 6 lanes of bridge traffic, 4 lanes of tunnel traffic, all dumping onto 4 lanes of bayway traffic. Well, that isn't going to work. You're going to have to expand the bayway. So now we're going to expand the bayway and add additional lanes to the bayway. Do you add it exactly at the same level and height and place as it is now? Or do you build completely separate bayway lanes? If you do that, you go ahead and help them out.
We're trying to get
a portion of I-10 in Ivan. So the decision Aldot's made is to raise the entire bayway, demolish existing, raise the entire bayway, and add 8 lanes of bayway in its place.
Hey, we lost you. You're probably in that hollow there somewhere around Sepulga or Murder Creek or something on your way to Montgomery. But go back. You said about Ivan. You're talking about the storm surge height in Ivan. Can you go back to that?
Correct. Yes, we lost the Pensacola portion of I-10 in Ivan. We lost the Pontchartrain portion of I-10 in Katrina. So the engineers are really looking at the height of the bayway as it currently exists and made the determination that not only do we need the additional lanes and capacity, but we need the additional height as well on the bayway in order to really not build something that's in a flood zone, if you will, or at risk of flood from storm surge.
Are these public meetings that Aldot's holding today and on Thursday, where they're going to hear from the public, do you think they're actually going to take these concerns into consideration, or is this one of those instances where they're setting up to hear people vent and then just going about business as they've already been going?
No, they are definitely listening, and so is FHWA, the Highway Administration, the Federal Highway Administration, and USDOT. And I'll just tell your listeners and my constituents on both sides, you know, and folks on both sides of the bay, it is crucial that you either get out to the public hearing or, just as crucial, submit a comment online. It doesn't have to be anything complicated, but let them know your thoughts and let them know how you want to proceed on this. If we need to take a step back and try to find some additional funding that we can, you know, put down on a down payment to lower the cost of the toll, then maybe that's exactly what we need to do. The problem is, you brought this up earlier, and I want to make sure everybody knows this, that we are at a critical juncture with this public-private partnership. We have these private entities who have spent millions and millions of dollars studying and getting ready to execute this project. If we back up too much at this point, we won't get them to the table again, and this might be our only chance. So I've got to work very quickly in Montgomery, and frankly, our folks in coastal Alabama have got to work very quickly to let folks know, listen, we may be willing to pay something, but this is not acceptable at the current rate and what the current rate or what the rate that is acceptable might be. But they're going to have to let their voices be heard. It's crucial.
Okay, so the idea would be local folks, I've just taken a stab at it, would have some other deal. I mean, the way that people have a Sun Pass or whatever in Florida, there would be a different deal for local people based on what your address or something, whether you could have that discounted rate.
So you cannot, the Federal Highway Administration will not let you base it on where Sean lives. They will let you base it on how often Sean uses it, and that's the kicker. So what we're going to have to do is base this on a frequent user discount. And that's what's in the federal regs, and that's what we'll have to base it on. But that's where we're going to focus, is making sure we increase the public subsidy so that we can increase the frequent user discount so that the rate of tolling goes down for our local users that are using this on a daily or even weekly basis.
But so under that constraint there, so a commercial driver, a trucker out of Tallahassee could qualify for it, and I might not.
You know, if he's using it, you know, several times a week, then yes. But I will say this, too, when you start talking about the commercial truckers, the rate that Aldot's proposing for them is vastly higher than what we're talking about for your regular commuters. And I think that's important to know too. They put more wear and tear on the road, and ALDOT's taking that into account when they're setting their toll structure.
If just joining us, talking to State Senator Chris Elliott on his way to Montgomery, but talking about the meeting tonight in Spanish Fort, and of course the meeting on Thursday in Mobile. Looking at the possibilities of, because I'm seeing some questions here, because I said, hey, you know, they're going to toll the Wallace Tunnel as well as the bridge, and we've been talking about that for months now, that is how the deal will work. Somebody's saying, I heard they're going to toll the other roads. The way I understand it, the Bankhead's not tolled, the Cochrane Africatown Bridge is not tolled. Is that the way you understand it?
That's correct. The current plan is, and this is ALDOT's plan, is to toll the Wallace Tunnel and the new bridge project and the Bayway. It is to leave as a free route, if you will, the Causeway, the Cochrane Africatown Bridge, and the Bankhead Tunnel untold.
Of course, you know that. I mean, this is. I don't think I'm rolling out something that no one has thought about, but the infrastructure work that'll probably have to go into Government Street and the Bankhead Tunnel, because necessarily the traffic will increase.
There's no question about it, and you're a west side of the Bay guy, and I'm an eastern shore yep. guy, but you should see the traffic just trying to get into the Bankhead Tunnel on most mornings. Backs up the Causeway, backs up the Bayway. It will be really, really something, and it's just time for ALDOT to take a step back and say, listen, toll avoidance is not just going to be an issue because there are other free routes. Toll avoidance is going to be an issue because this toll is simply too high, and local folks are going to either stop making the trip or are going to take free routes. All kinds of secondary problems on secondary roads like Highway 31 in Spanish Fork, on the Causeway, all through the Pritchard area, 165. This is going to be a big problem if the toll is high.
All right, before we wrap up here, and I know you're getting in a bad cell zone up there, but what's the number? What should the number be for local or frequent users of the proposed bridge?
It in order for it to be anywhere close to acceptable, for me, it would have to be half of what is proposed right now from locals. And that's still too high, Sean. But I think we're at the point where we're either at a go no go point.
I'm losing the signal here, but we'll have to have State Senator Chris Elliott back on to talk more about this going forward. And this is a conversation we'll have more during Midday Mobile today as well. Thank you. And I know that drive, and there's areas where you just Greenville, mm-hmm. get in there and drive Castleberry, drop the cell there in Castleberry. But once again, you have two Bay Bridge public hearings going on. One tonight starting at 5:30, going to 8 o'clock in Spanish Fort, and then Thursday night in Mobile as well. We'll talk more about this and come back and take a couple of your texts when we return right here on Mobile Mornings. All the way to, if you want to share that conversation, the podcast coming up next hour, the podcast at this hour will post up over at fmtalk1065.com, and you can grab it from there and share it, or you're already subscribing at iTunes or Stitcher or Spotify or TuneIn Radio, it'll be delivered to your smartphone. Hey, thanks, Kane. 857 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings, wrapping it up for this Tuesday. We'll be back today at noon for Midday Mobile. We'll pick this conversation up on the text line and on the phone line. Plus, more chances at tickets for Widespread Panic. Brian Adams, 99 bottles of beer on the lawn.
We're like the masters of tickets all of a sudden.
Something like that, that's for sure. That's what we'll be doing. So y'all check it out coming up at noon today. Mike Gallagher Show is on the way next.